Hello, I'm Kathy Bruce, and this is What We Did Next, a London Business School podcast where two amazing alumni come together to talk about what they've done since they left LBS, how their careers have developed, and what's top of mind for them right now as they look ahead. Today our guests are Elliot Dexter, founder and CEO of Purposefully Business, which helps companies integrate social purpose into their business. He took the Executive MBA at London Business School, a programme where you can study for an MBA without having to give up your job, from 2002 to 2004 when he was working in investment banking. Our second guest is Paul Sweeney, who studied on the same programme and, as you'll hear, went on to found various companies with mixed results, and he's now the Chief Strategy Officer at Unite Students. In this wide-ranging conversation, they touch on everything from what strategy really is and how to stay focused on it, to the crisis in mental health and how organisations are addressing it in new ways. Hello, Elliot. Hello, Paul. Thanks for joining us today. Could you start by just summing up where you're at in your business just now? And being strategy experts, can you tell me how you tackle this today?
I'm currently Chief Strategy Officer for Unite Students. So we're the biggest developer and operator of student accommodation. We've got 75,000 students a year that call us home. And I look after our strategy and pretty much everything to do with innovation.
I'm also a business strategist. I'm the CEO and founder of a business called Purposefully Business, and I'm known for integrating social purpose into businesses so that they can create greater impact, higher engagement for their people, and faster growth as well.
So you've both mentioned strategy already, which is a very overused word. I was going to ask you, what's sort of top of mind for you in your work right now? What's one of the challenges that you're facing?
Okay, so I guess for me, top of mind is we signed off a good strategy just over a year ago, but so much has changed in the world since then. It feels like everything's gone crazy. You know, we've got the war in Ukraine, insane inflation, out of control energy prices. It's just the rising cost of debt. Things have changed a lot in the last year. So I guess top of mind for me is really thinking, we have to take a view on what all this means, and we have to put a stake in the ground and say we think this is going to be our response to these trends, because we have to make some choices now. And I think that's the essence of strategy, really, is to make choices when confronted with lots of chaos and change.
Yeah, I was wondering that, because people often confuse sort of strategies with visions, don't they, and sort of ideas and, these big lofty sort of sounding things of where you're headed, as opposed to, what you're going to say yes or no to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that really for me is the essence. It's making those tough choices at the right time and just having that really solid strategic plan.
Yeah, look, I think it's really interesting because, as you say, we're both doing business strategy, but mine's quite different to what Paul is doing. So mine comes with a bit of a story. So in 2008, Paul will remember me from working in investment banking. So all the way through the MBA, I was an investment banker. Really great experience I had. Traveling around the world, getting promoted regularly, getting great bonuses, good pay rises. And then in 2008, UBS, the business that I was with, lost $80 billion in a day. And, UBS was seen as quite a good, well-managed, risk-controlled organization. And you just start to think, if you can't protect that amount of money, when your focus is to protect money and to make money for others, what's the purpose of what you're doing as an organization? So I started on that day a journey of thinking about business differently and thinking about the purpose of business. So my strategy is I work with a number of different types of businesses across different sectors to help them get back to what's the reason their business exists in the first place, and how do they, rebuild their business around that purpose? And what you find in every single case is the business isn't there to be a money-making machine. The business is there to solve a problem, to help people, or do something for the world. And then we build the business back, build the strategy back around that new purpose.
I think that's really interesting, Elliot. But I would say in response, I really love the purpose of our business. It's home for success. So all our thinking is around how do we help the students who live with us succeed? And that's one of the reasons that really attracted me to the business. So I think that's always at the forefront of our strategic thinking.
Yeah, and I think more and more businesses are going down that route, and that's the way we think as society now. I mean, as I went through most of my business education and started working, the core concepts were about shareholder value. And actually now when you talk to people, they want to work for businesses that make a difference, and they want to buy from businesses that are good businesses, and they know that the money they're spending is going towards something good. I'd love to hear more about your business. It sounds like exactly one of those businesses, Paul.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And we also, we've committed to give 1% of our profits to social causes. We've had a foundation for 10 years that helps put care leavers through university and does some amazing work there. So yeah, it's really something that's top of our mind all the time.
And so you met at LBS. You both did the executive MBA, you started doing it in 2002, so 20 years ago. What were your first impressions of each other? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was thought, who's that posh banker boy?
Paul was always, as you've probably picked up, Paul was always huge fun. He was the one that did the speech at the end of the MBA, and ribbed absolutely everyone, me included, with some doctored photos, I have to say. But what was also fascinating is we were from quite different industries. So you were working for an airline at the time, Paul, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, I'd never met anybody who'd worked at an airline. One of the things about investment banking was, you went in this graduate training program and all your best mates became bankers, your partners became bankers, you hung out with bankers. I never met a guy, certainly, who was, if I remember rightly, head of ground crew for KLM at City Airport, was it, Paul?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. So to meet this guy with this very different background and very different experience, and then actually finding, we did have things that we could talk about, and we did have similar problems in our teams that we could discuss and help each other, as well as have a lot of fun together, actually.
And I know it is a little while ago, but when you look back on some of the things that you sort of learnt on the programme, maybe from each other or from faculty, which sort of key things really sort of stayed with you and are still helping you at this point?
I think for me, it really helped me to be more curious about everything to do with business. I'd had a very narrow perspective before that, quite operational. And it just opened my eyes to so many things, and also taught me to question, accepted wisdom and what I thought was normal. So it's been a really interesting thing that sparked my curiosity, and I'm still super curious about so many things now, but that was quite a fundamental shift for me, I think.
Can you just trace your trajectory sort of from there to now, Paul? Sort of, so how did it go, go from there?
Initially, really badly. It was, and I think I did the entrepreneurship summer school with John Mullins, who I think is still at the university. And that was exceptionally dangerous, even though it was great fun. But what it did was it convinced a couple of us that we should try to be entrepreneurs, and on reflection, that was the worst possible decision I could ever have made. So I spent 2 years in the wilderness, basically earning nothing as I tried to start several failed businesses. Following that, I joined a startup with a crazy German that I'd met at the school, spent 3 years doing that until it went spectacularly bust. And then at the time, I had a conversation with one of our good friends and classmates, Paul MacArthur, saying, I guess I should get a job. And he said, oh, have you ever thought about consulting? Because my former commanding officer in the military runs a consulting firm in the city now. So I went to meet this guy, Chris, and the following Monday, I was a management consultant by accident. And then it's been a bit of a whirlwind ever since, really. I stayed there for about 5 years at a firm called Boxwood, then went to work for myself, then went back to another consulting firm, then went to work for myself, then went back to another consulting firm that was then sold, went back to work for myself. And then 2 years ago, Unite, which was one of my clients, offered me this job that I just couldn't say no to because it sounded like so much fun. That's a very whirlwind story of the last 20 years.
That sounds like quite a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's been great, and it's been so random. And I've found myself working in all kinds of really random things, from banking in Saudi Arabia to working with the Minister of Tourism of Bulgaria, through to working in Oman, and across a whole all kinds of industries, from utilities to banking again, to airlines again. Yeah, it's been tremendous fun. And very unexpected, I guess, as well.
And Elliot, Paul was talking about curiosity being one of the things that's stayed with him. What about you when you look back?
Yeah, probably two big things. The first one is it was a direct technique we used on the MBA itself, and I think it's very specific to exec MBAs because you just have no time for anything. So you get into this thought process of what's the objective? What are we here to achieve? How do you do it? And, when we had our group exercises that we would do, that's what we would do. We would get into a room and it's like, what's the objective? What are we trying to achieve and how are we going to do it? And I've probably used that right the way throughout my career, where you meet others that haven't been through the MBA process. And you get into those three questions, and it helps any group that you're part of on any topic. The second thing is really a confidence that if you put your mind to anything, you can do it. So, Paul going from working at KLM as you were at the time to then, becoming an entrepreneur. I had a very similar thing, from going to, well, all I really know is banking, to I then went and set up a real estate fund. And it was a impact-led fund, which I did for 3 years and then decided to close it. I then started a management consultancy, which was an impact consultancy, with a friend and business partner, which was very successful for 4 years, but ultimately me and the other partner wanted to take it into a different direction. And now I've started the strategy business that I talked about before. And I think without the MBA, I would probably post 2008 maybe have hunkered down in banking and, tried to make the best of it. And I don't know where that would have led to, but I'm really pleased that I decided to take the roller coaster instead. It's certainly been a lot more fun than it would have been, sitting in an office in Canary Wharf for 20 years.
I think the thing that's amazed me, Elliot, is there were still a handful of people in our cohort who, did the MBA and then went on doing exactly what they were doing before. And so kind of my reflection on the thing is there's no point in doing an MBA unless you're going to do something different with it. I always found that very interesting, actually.
But then what about the trajectory? I mean, I won't say any names, but we had a fantastic guy on our cohort who was a scientist. I mean, he'll be able to guess straight away, but he was a scientist. He was very senior at the European Weather Center. And what he knew was, chaos theory and meteorology. But what he didn't have any background in was how to run a European weather centre and do the leadership stuff and do the communication pieces. And he, you know, he and his wife did an MBA, and their careers stayed in the same thing, but they shot up through their organisations.
No, that's very true. But I was more thinking about other people that we know who sort of went back into consulting firms and, you know, made partner 20 years later. And I'm pretty sure that the MBA made no difference at all to that trajectory.
And I wanted to get your thoughts on sort of, you know, meaning and purpose a bit more broadly. So, you know, for people listening who are perhaps a bit earlier in their careers and thinking about how to find their own why and you know, as you said, wanting to do something that isn't just about making money, but is also of use to the society around them. What sort of advice do you have for them?
Honestly, I think we should take their advice, because I think that the people doing MBAs, and maybe particularly full-time MBAs, are better at this than we are. I think they had, whereas we had an upbringing, or certainly for myself, coming up through the education of the 80s and 90s and doing economics, learning all about shareholder value, I don't think somebody who's doing an MBA today had that sort of upbringing. You know, they were a lot younger when the credit crisis happened and saw images and impacts of that credit crisis and thought, what on earth have the people before us done? What's this approach that they've taken to business? And I think over the last 20 years since our MBA, the world has almost fallen out of love with the way business used to be done. And I think, you know, to use the dreaded phrase millennials, right? The millennials are much better at this than we are. And I think people of mine and Paul's generation are, you know, we're a little bit late to the party because of the journey that we've been through, but we're learning from younger people a different way to do business. Paul, I don't know if you'd agree with that at all.
I would agree with that. I might answer the question in a slightly different way, which is I've tended to find that the areas of work that, you know, that are particularly interesting and rewarding and fun and where you learn a lot, you know, means you can add more value, and they tend to line up quite nicely with purpose, because, you know, when you're learning and having fun, and a lot of that is around, you know, helping other people to develop or delivering great things to customers or helping organizations to function in more meaningful ways. There seems to be quite a correlation between things that you find interesting and fun and that are ultimately, you know, valuable for a range of stakeholders. So I kind of tended to fall back now on, am I having fun? Am I learning stuff? Is my two primary questions really for any kind of career discussions.
Can you give an example of when you felt that was most aligned, when you were sort of having fun and learning and doing something genuinely useful?
Yeah, so last year, you know, post sort of COVID, our business was kind of coming back to life, and my team and I, we went on a sort of 16-city roadshow to talk to all our frontline employees who deliver the experience for our students when they live with us, and we helped them understand, very much to Elliot's point, we helped them understand the attitudes of these younger people that were coming to live with us, what they cared about. We gave them some great data about those students. They'd answered some questions about what they were interested in, what they were concerned about. And we just really challenged our teams to think out of the box, think differently, really go for it, to create experiences for those bespoke sort of communities that were coming to their buildings. And not only was that great fun to unleash all that creativity, it just really brought the teams back together after such a long time apart. And then following that, once the customers arrived in September, we had tremendous feedback about all the things the teams had put in place. So, yeah, that was, I think, for me, a good example of some stuff that was really fun stretched our thinking, really got sort of creative, you know, input from the teams, gave them freedom to exercise that, and made a meaningful impact on the happiness of our customers.
And when you were talking earlier about the various businesses that you sort of started and then some of which went horribly wrong, what did you learn from those experiences, from the sort of, you know, the sort of huge excitement at the start followed by the awful plummeting feeling as it goes wrong?
I think what I learned is I'm far too lazy to be an entrepreneur. That's the basic thing, really. It's hard work. Wow. Yeah, not for me.
So, Elliot, I mean, you are now, you know, doing in this position of, you know, progressing your own enterprise. How do you sort of keep confident and keep that sort of determined focus when you hit, you know, little blocks in the road?
Yeah, I mean, but Paul's right. It's hard work, and I sit here very, very tired at the moment. But it ties back to the example that Paul just gave about the students. It's if you can see the impact that you're having, that's what drives you. And for me personally, it's, you know, it's great to have money coming in, but it's not the money that drives me. It's when I went to work in July with a business in the construction industry, and they were a health and safety business. And I got to work with the leadership team and some of the stories that they told about why they got into health and safety. And we were able to bring those stories to life, and through that actually pivoted their business. And they're now working towards becoming much more of a mental health focused organization. And the early results that they're getting from their customers and from the team are just fantastic. And I was just on the call with the CEO just before talking to both of you, and to have that conversation, see the impact that it's having on that business and the mental health of their customers is, you know, it's fantastic. So that's what keeps me going.
Yeah, because you're both in health and safety, which has got such a different connotation, hasn't it? Can you tell us about mental health and the impact it has in the construction company you worked with? What did you need to ask them to understand what was going on, and why is mental health important?
Yeah, so what I do when I work with a leadership team is I get them to look backwards at why they started the business in the first place, but without asking them that direct question, and getting them to tell stories about the time when they started the business, how they were feeling, and what happened. And one of the senior guys in the room told a story about being at work one day and somebody being missing. It took them about 48 hours to find him. And when they found him, he was hanging from the third floor. And when obviously this was discovered and the management team talked about what they were going to do, what they decided to do, it was an active construction site. They were on tight timelines, and they just sectioned off part of the third floor and asked all the workers to continue working. That happened over a decade ago, but the impact that it had on everybody working on site that day, obviously huge impact on that individual's family, but impact on every single one of those workers from a mental health standpoint, is what made that director of the company that I work with leave what he was doing and go and start to work in health and safety, because it was the closest thing that existed that he felt helped with this experience that he'd had, but it didn't quite get him close enough to it. And there were similar stories in the room. So when we started working through those stories, working through those themes, and starting to relook at how their business can refocus, mental health was something that popped out that they were all very, very passionate in, and a number of them were very skilled in as well.
Yeah, I can see how it's a really important area of concern, and especially in an industry like construction, which is still very male dominated, and traditionally men haven't really talked about their mental health or feelings, have they? And Paul, what do you make of well-being as a thing? You know, it's become very sort of central to
all businesses, you know, when they lay out their plans, it's always sort of there now, front and centre, isn't it? And obviously we're looking after, you know, with students, that's obviously something that's quite, well, pretty important for them as well. I mean, I wondered how you tackle well-being in your sort of student community, whether you kind of have, you know, particular initiatives around it, or whether it's just so embedded that everyone assumes it's going to be part of, you know, the experience and what you're offering.
So I think what we've seen is a really disturbing rise in mental health issues, particularly in young people. And we have put a lot of things in place to support. So all of our buildings have specially trained welfare staff, and we have welfare rooms where students can talk to us confidentially. We work very closely with the universities on this as well, but it's a core part of our offer, and it's one I think that, you know, students may not necessarily appreciate at the time they arrive, but it's certainly something their parents appreciate, and they certainly appreciate it if they have to use it. But it is a real area of concern for us. And even, you know, with me as a parent, one of my children has had quite a few mental health challenges, and it does seem to be becoming a bit of an epidemic amongst younger people. So I, you know, it's a real issue for society as well as for, you know, for businesses, I think.
So what do you think organisations can do to improve real connection between people? Because a lot of places, you know, they run seminars and quite well-meaning initiatives sometimes around mental health. But actually, the people within the business sometimes, you know, might be feeling quite isolated or whatever.
So it's very interesting. And I, as a consultant, I was working in a bank, which I'll remain nameless, where they launched a wellbeing initiative. And the measure of success for the leadership team was how many of their line managers uploaded a wellbeing plan onto the system. And that was tick the box, okay, all the plans are there. So a lot of what happens, I think, in organizations is a bit of lip service. I don't know what the technical term would be, but it, you know, when you think about greenwashing in the sustainability space, there's a similar thing, I think, that goes on in quite a lot of organizations where you hear a lot of noise, but really doesn't seem to make much difference.
Did you have any thoughts, Elliot, on that?
Yeah, look, I don't profess to be an expert in mental health. I'm definitely not. But I think having a purpose does help. If you're clear on why you get up in the morning, what you're trying to achieve, and you can get yourself focused on trying to achieve that, I think that has to be a good thing. And certainly, you know, I don't have any scientific evidence for that, but anecdotally, you do see people that, you know, they're going to work just to earn the money that they need to pay their mortgage, versus somebody who's going to work who's really passionate about working for an organisation that helps students or helps put sanitation into parts of the world where there is no sanitation, or helps with mental health. And if you're doing something like that on a daily basis, the impact on your own mental health of being able to help others certainly seems to be a positive.
The other thing I might add, though, is I find this an interesting debate. It's a bit like the debate around employee engagement, where, you know, people start with the assumption that it's all down to the employer to engage or to make engagement happen, and not the responsibility also of the employee to be engaged. And again, in this mental health debate, there's a balance to be had, I think, between making sure that, you know, while in work, things aren't happening to detract from your mental health. There's also an element of people need to take personal responsibility to do things that improve their mental health as well. So it tends to be quite a paternalistic view of the world sometimes that you hear from. And my view is that there's a there's a joint responsibility in these things.
I think that's a great articulation, Paul, isn't it? I think in any relationship, each party needs to do their part, but then there's a third part that you need to do together. So whether it's an employer creating the right environment that is a safe environment and an encouraging environment, the employee coming with an open-minded, honest, open mindset, and then working together to understand what a good relationship and good mental health workplace looks like. Again, I'm not an expert, but seems like a positive approach.
So then finally, I'll ask both of you, since it's gone in that direction, you've both got these huge jobs as senior leaders and responsible for lots of people. What do you do to keep your own mental health in good shape amongst all of this?
Yeah, it's something I'm definitely paying more attention to lately. So I think, it's sleep, it's diet, it's exercise. It's very bad meditation, but nonetheless trying a little bit. It's a combination of those things, getting time to relax, getting time by yourself. For me, I need some time by myself, so I try to protect that as well. And I guess one of the things about being slightly more senior after a while is you find it easier to say no to things. And that's a useful skill at times.
I think everything that Paula said is right, and I agree with it. I'd add also just being, very honest about your own emotions and about the fact that everything doesn't always work. I mean, if I think back to the, male figures in my family when I was young, they weren't allowed to have emotions. They weren't allowed to have any problems or challenges. They had to be strong and they just had to, lead, if you like. And it's being able to say, actually, for everyone, sometimes things are not working out. And actually to be able to say to your partner, your colleagues, I'm struggling and I need a bit of help.
Great. Well, thank you both so much for coming and talking to us today. I think there's so many different things in there that people are going to find really interesting and I'm sure inspiring. So, wishing you the very best with your next few months, and it'll be interesting to pick up a year from now and see where you're at.
Fantastic. Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy.
You've been listening to What We Did Next from London Business School. You can find more alumni stories together with thought leadership from London Business School professors at london.edu/think. And if you're an alum and you'd like to take part in a future episode of this podcast, please drop me a line at kbrewis@london.edu. I'd be really happy to hear from you. Thank you.